You ever wish you could turn off your brain and work efficiently without any distractions from your regular life or the weight of your insignificance bearing down on you? Well, do we have the opportunity for you? Get yourself severed. It's not a sex thing. I know it sounds kind of like that. It's absolutely safe for work. In fact, it's the best for work. Or is it?
I'm Kat.
And I'm Gabe.
And we're
the Ghouls Next Door. Talking about spooky stuff.
As we do. Welcome.
Yes, we're the media literacy show from a horror lens where we explore the real life, historical, and corporate horrors behind our cinematic fears. And today we're talking about how horrifying work is.
Yeah. Remember that thing that, like, before we didn't need to do to get money? And now we need to do it to get money, and you can't do things without money. So, like, if you don't work, you will die. And it's like a whole negative time.
Yeah. Remember when they were like, let's make that cool. Let's make working until it hurts like a cool thing to do.
Like in fashion. Yeah.
Everyone wants to do it now.
Popular. Yeah. By demand.
Yes. As part of our Horrors of Society series, we're talking about the workplace science fiction, though pretty eerily close to reality, television show by Apple TV called Severance.
Yeah. And I loved it. Just so everyone knows right from the rip, I loved it. I thought it was great. If someone thought it was bad, tell me why. But, like, I really, really liked it. So,
yeah, I originally it wasn't on this list. And then I was like, duh, it makes sense. And then I was like, Kat, you're going to love this. And then they were like, okay. And now they're like watching it twice.
Yeah, I'm watching it twice because Isaiah didn't watch it with me the first time because he was traveling for work, ironically, away from home. And then he was like, I'd watch it. And I was like, I will watch it again.
Yeah.
Say less.
I feel that. And it's like, it is a really great rewatch too, because it's one of those shows where you're, when you watch a second time and you know what happens, now you can pick up on things and you're like, oh, that's why that, because the whole first time you're like, what is going on? What is this? What's happening? Who is that?
So much uncertainty. And also, like, you don't know why people are doing what they're doing because you don't have, like, the setup of the world. Mm-hmm. So, like, on second watch, there's a lot of, like, very subtle things that I was like, oh, I totally just didn't pay attention to that the first time. Like, specifically anything to do with Helly and, like, how she's treated in the beginning. And like all of like the little things that they do throughout to like reward them that are like not very rewarding. I understand why in this windowless room they got a little upset.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very creative and it's uncomfortable. It does a great job of being uncomfortable by just taking things that are pretty mundane and regular and then just putting them like a little outside of the norm, so you're like, that's, what is that? That's not right. But it's like, it's not entirely wrong either.
Yeah, kind of like that uncanny valley uncomfortableness. Mm-hmm. Or just like, this doesn't, I don't want this. Make it stop.
Yeah. It's definitely the uncanny valley of the workforce in the corporate culture.
Look at us in there.
Change it. And I, you know, had watched this interview with the creator, and one of the parts I thought was really funny is that it was years in the making. They're waiting forever. And we always talk about this too, how often, you know, things are waiting and they don't even change very much for years, but it's still very valid, like the story is still very valid. And so he waited years, and when he learned that it got picked up, it was, he was doing Postmates, he was delivering Postmates, and he got a call.
Wow.
And his manager was like, hey, Ben Stiller is gonna call you because he wants to direct your program. And he's like, okay, let me just make this delivery really quick. and then I'll call you back. Like, that's such a crazy, and it's that.
That's crazy. That's an amazing story. Like, the intro to this. Yeah. Like, what? That's insane.
I love that he's normal. Perfect. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, you're like, to be inspired to write something about how working can be really sus, like the work culture can be really sus, and have had these like grinding jobs where you're like, I just have to do this because I have to, I need live, to pay bills. Yeah. I gotta live.
Or like, even like a lot of what the show explores is like using work as an escape, using mm-hmm. it as a distraction, using it because you have to. Like, there's so many things that make people vulnerable to these jobs that mm-hmm. really comes through in the show. So I love, when I first started watching it, I saw Ben Stiller's name and I was like, when has he ever not been famous? And, I was like, and then I realized, oh wait, he didn't write it. Okay, who wrote it? And then I didn't even get to the fact that he had done Postmates and like was a regular guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'll talk about how I came up with the idea and some of those things in my section. And there's like, I will say there's so much to say about the film, and there's a lot, or the show, and there's a lot that's been said, so I don't like, I'm not treading new ground. Yeah. And I'm just like compiling some information, talking about things that I found interesting, just about the ideas that are being covered, and specifically about like a lot of the secrets and what that means, and less about like just the fact that working sucks, right? Because yeah. that is, I think what they're doing is an entire conversation in and of itself, and yeah. why it's easy for us to do what we do in work is also very interesting. So yeah, it just, there is a lot to be said. So we will link some, you know, other reviews and informative posts in our show notes, so you can always do some more digging. Highly, highly recommend watching the show if you haven't. Definitely worth like an Apple TV trial, you know.
Which is so interesting, like Apple, why they're a big corporation. Why are they critiquing big corporations? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting.
And it's also interesting to think it had been like 6 years and it hadn't been picked up. So it's just thinking of like how many organizations and companies saw it and was like, that's amazing. It is an amazing show, but we can't say it. We can't put it out there. So like, it's kind mm-hmm. of brave, I think, to for Apple TV to do that, especially being a big
corporation,
evil corporation that they are.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, something I really appreciate about the show too is like, I didn't know it took so long to make it. So the fact that it was written before the pandemic makes mm-hmm. it just like stand out so much more for me, because like a lot of what it's saying was so reinforced by the pandemic that like it didn't even have that influence yet. That's just pretty neat.
Yeah. I also think, you know, there's a trend in like science fiction films that are like really close to reality, where they live in like a timeless space. Mm-hmm. So especially where they are in Severance, like in Lumen, the company, it's kind of this weird, almost like nostalgic vibe to it, but it's also something that could be existing now. And so it makes me think of like Her, right? And mm-hmm. how everyone wore clothes that kind of felt timeless because it was like yeah. old but new. And yeah. like that happens often, where it's just like, this could be anytime, this could be anywhere. And it is happening now, and it's happening before, it's happening in the future. And yeah. I think that's really cool.
Oh yeah, that's really
it's cool. No Cronenberg, like, I can't imagine that future. It's like, no, that there's a basement somewhere that has these exact computers.
Yeah, or like this dynamic too. Like, we may have seen like the transition or death of cubicle culture, but there is still very much like these office dynamics taking mm-hmm. place, or just like this uncomfortability in work-life balance and what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we swapped out cubicles for just the open rooms, so now it's like we don't even have walls. Yeah. Like we're just all together, we all have to hear each other's conversations and be like, what's going on over there?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's not good
if you're easily distractible.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, why don't I hop in?
Do it.
Let's talk about Severance from 2022, the first season. And the second season is, fingers crossed, coming around. So I'll talk about some of the bumps in the road that it has encountered. But, you know, hoping it'll be here soon. But what Severance is about is Mark leads a team of office workers whose memories have been surgically divided between their work and personal lives. When a mysterious colleague appears outside of work, it begins a journey to discover the truth about their jobs, and it's created by Dan Erickson. So the whole premise is, you ever wish you could turn off your brain and work efficiently without any distractions from your regular life or the weight of your insignificance bearing down on you? Well, do we have the opportunity for you? Get yourself severed. It's not a sex thing. I know it sounds kind of like that. It's absolutely safe for work. In fact, it's the best for work. Or is it?
Yeah.
So creator and writer Dan Erickson got the crazy idea that I'm sure we've all had at some point in our lives, that when you're working at a mindless and uncreative job that requires none of our personality and all of our workforce potential. So while working at a door factory, that's what he called it, because he said it sounds more like Monsters, Inc., essentially a company that made, sold, and installed doors and fences, Erickson was struck by the idea of clocking out of his own mind. In an interview on the Q&A podcast as part of Backstory Magazine, Erickson remembers the thought that launched the award-winning show, saying, "I was there and I was going into work one morning and I literally had this idea that was like, what if there was some way where you could sit, be at a desk doing your job, but you didn't have to be, you didn't have to associate with that time. You could pull away and not experience it. And you could just feel like you had skipped the workday. And that's a kind of horrifying thing to catch yourself wanting. And it was all just born out of that."
Yeah. You but hate your job so hard that you don't even want to exist in that space, you know?
Yeah, or not even just like that you hate it, right? It could just be so meaningless to you, yeah, right? Like, it just doesn't demand anything from you other than just like input some numbers, crack some codes, whatever you're doing, but like, it's meaningless. Like, I love a day that's just data entry. I do love that. Yeah. I love a day where I could zone out, I'm just listening to music and I'm just like writing stuff and I don't have to think. But if that was every day, it drives me crazy.
Agreed.
So I think that's really what it is. It's like, I wish I could just go somewhere else and not have to remember that I did that.
Yeah.
So having such a mindless job can be rewarding in that way. And it was at this job, actually, and others that were equally unfulfilling but paid the bills, that Erickson was able to focus and write the pilot for the show. And it made me think that my partner actually had a similar situation where he's working at a security position with very minimal interaction with humans and like anything, that left him with a lot of time on his hands and very bored. And so he wrote an entire book.
Yeah.
He was reading an entire book at that point. So this idea that nobody wants to work anymore is not only false because people have never wanted to work, but also a gross workforce version of the girls don't date nice guys argument, because it's not real.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, first of all, you're not a nice guy. Work is not a nice guy.
Yeah.
And no, we don't want to date you.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to work. Working sucks. It's laborious. A word with synonyms like arduous, heavy, difficult, strenuous, grueling, and murderous. Look it up.
That's
in the dictionary. Right? The pandemic highlighted these very feelings in an extreme way, reducing us to the bare bones components of working, removing our interactions with coworkers and maybe some of those other maybe more meaningful interactions that we had throughout the day. And it's literally like, do the work, you're staring at a screen.
Yeah.
And now all the interactions you have with people is also staring at a screen, which could be like, which kind of just awakened us to the truth of what we've been doing this whole time, because we didn't have those little sprinkles in to be like, oh, everything's fine.
Yeah, the distractions were gone.
Yes. So it reminded us that we are not built only for working. We are humans, complex with our needs, and like tedious, mismanaged plants, we are all yearning for some sunlight and community photosynthesis. And so when Severance premiered in 2022, we all felt the message deeply. I was like, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like anyone who like just stays at a job for their coworkers, but then now you don't ever get to see your coworkers. It's like, why am I here?
Yeah.
My loyalty was not to the company, it was to the people. And if the people are no longer like keeping me here, bye, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I stayed at many jobs just because of the people who were there. And a big part of what I really love about the job I do in the daytime was always the people, whether it's coworkers or the other people that I interacted with. And without them there, I was like, nothing matters. I don't matter. I hate this. So until I was able to like incorporate ways to interact with humans again, it was like, I'm going to go crazy. Yeah. But I do know it's like, I do really love my job most of the time. So, mm-hmm. And I know that I'm like an outlier. Not many places have like the same feelings. So I get it. And I've also lived for like mind-numbing jobs too. So in Severance, employees at the mega company of undisclosed mysterious purpose, Lumen, has undergone an extreme new surgery that severs their minds into two parts, right? So we have ourselves as we know them, our outside everyday life parts of ourselves, which remember everything we've done in life and interact with our family, our friends, and our grief. And whatever other heaviness we'd be carrying around with us, right? These are affectionately referred to as outies, which is kind of cute. But now, through the severance process, they have birthed a new version of themselves that exists alongside this first self, one that does not remember their life other than work. And it's birthed as in, like, they wake up on a table, and in the first moment of their existence as this human, because, again, they did not exist before this. Your work person is born in the severance process. They wake up on a table and they listen to words of someone through a speaker, and it's separated and new to them. The creator, Erickson, mentioned that in some of the first drafts of the script, it had more of like a Cronenbergian like flesh technology where where it literally, like, at first it was Mark who's on the table, not Helly. And he's like birds out of what he said he can only describe as an anus.
Oh.
Like a fleshy thing just squirts him out. And then he's like talking to whatever, who the person on the intercom. And it's kind of this idea of like when you're in the womb and you just hear your parents through like this
like
barrier. And then all of a sudden you're born, you go through the door, and now you exist.
So in that version, it's like they're clones more so than
themselves. There's a lot of differences in some of the first iterations that were pretty interesting. But I like this version, not just because I don't particularly love flesh technology, but because it is like, it still holds that like birth aspect to it.
Yeah.
Because they are very much new. Yeah. Right. And this is the only world that they know, the only world they're allowed to live in. And that's scary.
Yeah.
Like they're babies. So these are innies, right? So you have outies and innies. And once an employee clocks in to Lumen, taking the elevator to their respective floors, something triggers the severance, activating their innies existence. So they turn on.
Yeah.
And now they're like, oh, time for work. I don't know what happened between now and then, which is so scary. Like that's the scary thing to me. Like, yeah, work sucks. You don't know. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, and Innie's whole world is inside the office. So when they clock out, the elevator switches their brain back onto their outie life and memory. And at first, the idea can seem positive, right? Some people already practice a form of severance in their lives now.
Yeah.
Though not obviously as extreme as surgical manipulation, there are workers who are known as extreme segmenters. And in an article on HuffPost titled Apple TV's Severance Nails How Absolutely Inhuman Our Work Culture Is, writer Monica Torres explains how researchers studying our work-life balance have designated workers into different types, saying segmenters separate work and home through objects. For example, by having separate calendars, uniforms, or keys for each place or activity, segmenters love ending the workday at the same time every day. Integrators, on the other hand, are workers that prefer for everything to be intertwined and don't need hard lines because where work starts and begins, between where work starts and begins. Integrators don't mind taking an hour break at lunch and then going back to work. And then, you know, there's people on the in-between. I've definitely known people as segmenters who are like, the workplace is, that's my work me. And I remember saying to Kat, because there's like clearly this chemistry between two characters.
Yeah.
I was like, this is like a whole new definition to the work wife. Because it's work, like any Mark doesn't know anything about Audi Mark. Like Audi Mark gonna have a whole life. So like people who are in there might have families and children.
Yeah.
And they don't know. And then they come in here and they're like, oh, I fall in love with you. I'm a different person in here.
Yeah. There was like a whole, like in the background, a news article that said, and Indy got pregnant.
Oh.
So the Audi had to like deal with it. But like, they're like, how did that happen? Are you not monitoring the Indies? You know what I mean? Like, it was like a whole just sidebar conversation that one of the protesters were having.
Yeah. And it's like, is it consensual then? Because it's your body, but the any you might have consented, but the Audi you didn't.
Yeah.
So what? Yeah, it's like
this contract where you can't know who else is in there. So you're like, you don't even get to know who the person is. That's crazy.
Yeah,
you're
gonna have this baby, and it's like they don't ever know.
Or like severed for pregnancy. That's a theme.
Yes. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. Some people get severed so they don't remember that pregnancy hurts. Like giving birth
hurts. Like that severed version never gets to meet their child.
Yeah. Oh, that's super sad.
Yeah.
We should wrap. Like, I get it. Like, sometimes you don't want to remember stuff.
Yeah.
Because stuff can be hard. But we've talked about this. We've talked about how important it is to sometimes hold on to those memories. Because they influence who you become and are. And our sunshine of the spotless mind. So the show follows Mark, Helly, Irving, and Dylan, all working diligently under the watchful eyes of the hot, I mean, just regular Mr. Melchick. Kyle's like, what? Like, listen, okay, the costume.
No, he's hot. I get it. He just scares me.
He is scary.
The way his eyes do, the rage thing that he does with the smile.
It's a whole thing. Like, he's so good at it.
He's a fantastic actor, yeah.
The costume department knew what they were doing. They gave him those pants on purpose.
That's true.
It makes me think, like, in high school, we had a Spanish teacher, and he always wore really tight pants and, like, tight shirts. And he'd be like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
The hormones. You need to stop.
This is not right.
Yeah.
this is talk about, like, when women are like, you're wearing a dress and it's inappropriate. Like, he was inappropriate. Mr. Melchick is inappropriate for the workplace.
He's just too hot.
So he is like super corporate. He's like your boss. He does like the smiles that are uncanny valley because you know they're insincere.
He does not mean them. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's manipulative as heck.
Yeah.
So, but this team work in the metadata refinement division of Lumen. Question mark, what that is? No one knows. Helly is a new addition, and after being just born into this corporate world, is immediately over it and refuses to live in the sunless void that is their office. She's like, I'm not having it. I don't want to live without the sun. I quit.
Yeah.
I resign. So she sends many requests to her Audi asking that they resign, but is consistently denied. And Helly gets more and more desperate for escape and threatens her own safety to get the message through. And still, she gets a severe, like, thrashing from her Audi that's like, you're not real. I'm real. You're not allowed to leave. And it's like, that's scary. Sad. Mark is a longtime employee who we learn has a tragic history that led him to the severed process. After losing his wife, an event that still haunts Audi Mark, he opted for a few hours every day to simply not have to remember he'd loved and lost. And it's totally relatable. I get it. Only even with it, without the specific memories of the loss, Amy Mark will often physically feel the aftermath of Audi Mark's depression, proving that the severance isn't without its flaws, even in this regard.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a character that mentions, like, you know, when you, like, the other you spent all night crying.
Yeah.
You know, you feel it.
Yeah.
It's not like everyone else knows. We look at you, we see your face. Your face is the same. But now the problem is, I don't know why I'm sad.
Yeah.
So it feels even more like you're not in control of yourself. Uh-huh. And it's just like a constant state of like trauma in that regard, because you don't know. Like, and a lot of them start exhibiting weird like hallucinations or feelings that are clearly being compounded because they're not able to work through their own traumas and stresses in a healthy way as the innie, because they don't have any context. So like, yeah. Irving, love him to death. He has some really severe traumatic responses and it's like, I don't know why. So viewers follow these characters as they slowly begin to question the placating conditions that they work under, and they venture outside the floor's white walls and encounter all kinds of troubling scenarios, leading to an understanding that the severance process is far more troubling than first believed. Although anyone on the outside would tell you it's a big red flag. People are protesting. They're like, this is, and it feels kind of real. I feel like if this existed, people would 100% sign up.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't ask any questions.
Well, yeah, because there's people who, like, don't want to be in their lives because their lives are sad for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be attached to that for part of the day. Or it's like, you know what? That's a paycheck. That's going to put food on the table. I don't really care what we have to do to get there.
Well, that was like, I've always had that conversation with people who are like, I wish I had a clone and then they could go to work. And I was like, okay, but they can't only go to work.
Yeah.
Because then that clone is going to get mad.
Yeah.
The clone's going to get mad. The clone's not going to want to be the work clone. Like, that's not fair, because it's you.
Switch with you. Yeah.
What do you mean? Already want to work. You'd have to, like, there'd have to be like, okay, you take these days, I take these days. Right.
Yeah. Like, we just, like, switch a transition off. So that everyone gets like a 3-day work week or something.
Yeah. Not everyone's going to, like, yeah. I've always been like, that's cruel. And then this show was made and I was like, see?
Yeah. There's got to be, you know, two yous. Excellent. Split it up.
Yeah. And, you know, for all this, the show is really creative with its horror, and that it is as cold and unfeeling as corporate culture is in reality. The first iterations of the script featured more dramatic sci-fi or fantastical realism inspirations with flesh technology or the presence of robots, maybe. Erickson mentioned, like, there was a time where he had one of the floors was like a replica of what the floors they're on, but it was like almost like a war zone, like something terrible had happened there. And then a pair of disembodied legs run by. And one of the biggest rules that Ben Stiller instilled on the production, like when he was talking about taking it on, was that they needed an answer for everything. It was like, we don't all have to know about it. It could still be weird and peculiar for viewers, but the team behind it needs to have the answers.
Yeah.
So when they had that in the script, he was like, what is that? What does that mean? And Erickson's like, I don't know. It's weird. He was like, okay, we can't do that.
Yeah, it has to have like a plot twist to reveal later down the line.
Or not even, it doesn't even have to be that heavy. It just has to be like, we need to know what the motivations are. We need to know what the point is of that. So that's kind of relieving to me.
Yeah.
To know that everything has a point. Yeah. Because
that
does not always happen. He said some people who were suggesting notes, some of them were just like, do weird stuff. And then it doesn't matter if it doesn't have an answer, just have fun. And it was like, this isn't Lost. Okay. We don't need to do that.
Yeah. Maybe it needs to be.
What is the smoke monster? What about the polar bear? Like, we never answer the polar bear in Lost.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this has to be weird, you know?
Yeah, it was just
weird,
like
island stuff. Just let it happen.
Anyway, the finished piece, however, is corporate and realistic, even in its absurdity. Like, it feels like it's adjacent to reality every time.
Yeah.
It's like, here's what would really happen. And then it's like,
yeah.
And then you're like, oh, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The show repurposes corporate terminology and culture into something far more honest and equally grim. The severance procedure is an extreme form of the non-disclosure agreement, inspiring questions about what the employees of Lumen are up to down there in their cubicles. The meaningless nonsense designations of their roles is amplified. Like, what does macro data refinement even mean? It's nonsense.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Sometimes it's like someone tells you what they do and you're like, what is that? That's me.
It's like a nod to like the jobs that like exist but don't need to.
Yeah.
But they make them because people need money to live. So they're like, all right, yeah, you just sit in a room and do this for a few hours. We'll pay you. Great. But you're like, what do you do, though? And no one knows.
Yeah, it's so weird. And it's just like, yeah, it's and also the fuzziness of it, like, because it's all compartmentalized. You don't know what you're doing. And that's the scary. I think that is the scariest thing, is like, you don't know what you have created, what you could have done.
Yeah, you could have done, like, messed up stuff. Or, like, they could be hurting you in there and you have no idea. Because they are. I mean, ultimately. But, yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No access.
In that same article, Torres reinforces the terminology's newly villainous meaning, saying, at Lumen, obtuse business language is also a euphemism for corporate misdeeds. The break room is actually a detention center designed to break employees' spirits, and an overtime contingency mechanism is a sinister surveillance tool that violates employees' privacy. So it's like stuff that we use, and it's like, this one's scary. And as far as any of the macro data refinement sector know, their job is to sort numbers. Sort them into where, why, and what. is not addressed. The process is a bizarre blend of monotony and abstraction. The workers are told to sort numbers based on how the numbers make them feel. So WO numbers, they make you feel sad. FC numbers are associated with happiness and joy. DR numbers will scare you. And MA numbers make you angry. Nice. And you're like, how does number equal emotion? So when new hire Helly inquires about this process, wondering how she could possibly know when a number is scary, she is told that she'll simply feel it. And she does, and it's crazy. And this odd association with something mundane, eliciting a puzzling, vivid, and emotional reaction, reminds me of inherited traumas, where our bodies may be triggered by something our brain remembers. Sometimes that memory isn't even ours, but of our ancestors, our relatives before us, and we somehow remember it. And now we have this visceral feeling, and it's not even ours. Or we don't know why, right? Something in that severance process has inspired these emotions, tied to numbers on a screen, and the idea that technology could have such an impact on us is terrifying in itself.
Like, yeah, like, that is really, really scary. Program the brain to feel emotions with the sight of numbers.
Yeah. So it's like, what is like, they had to have experienced some type of trauma during that to trigger it.
For sure. Or they're like, like, in the onboarding process, they're like doing buzzing or like shock therapy, I guess, or like therapy, you know what I mean? Like, where they buzz you for different numbers so you have different emotional responses. Mm-hmm. But like, there had to be some sort of like training to get that, or even, I don't know, torture of sorts.
Something is going on, right? Mm-hmm. But even more troubling than the physical response of these employees is the ambiguity around what sorting the numbers means. In an article on Mashable titled Four Fascinating Things We Learned from the Severance Companion Book, writer Belen Edwards uncovers some troubling hypotheses around the work done at Lumen, saying, what does the macro data refinement team do? If the Lexington letter is to be believed, macro data refiners are unknowingly engaging in corporate espionage. Peggy's Annie tells her that she completed a big file titled Lexington at 2:30 p.m. Later that day, Peggy hears that a truck belonging to Dorner Therapeutics, a Lumen competitor, had been blown up, destroying several Dorner devices and killing six. The bomb went off at 2:32 p.m., just after the Lexington file had been completed. Peggy acknowledges in her letter that it could just be a coincidence, but knowing how sick and twisted Lumen is, the timing is too close to be an accident, right? And so this idea had me considering the game Orwell, which I've talked about quite a few times on the show, but it's a game where you play as a government employee surveying the public looking for dangerous terrorists. And in the game, you are only given a computer screen to work with. Like, it's literally just a computer surface.
Yeah.
And you search the web and search people's social media in order to figure out where they are and what they're doing and why it's bad. So you navigate the cyber world to find answers. And there's like having this distance from the humans you're surveying allows you to make some drastic decisions that could be harmful to the humans on the other side of the screen. But you don't have that direct connection, right? So this separation from action and consequence alleviates the hesitation one might have when making these decisions when someone's life could be in danger. It's like that, I don't know if it was actually real or if it's been disproven, but where they said, like, if you put the buzzer or whatever, it would shock somebody else, and like people would buzz it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
But it's because we don't hear it, right? We don't hear it. We don't see it. So it's like, whatever.
Or the movie you watch, The Button or whatever, where it's like, yeah, you kill someone else by touching the button, but you don't know them. Yeah.
Yeah. But you could know them.
Yeah.
How do you get $1 million? Oh, oops, your husband died and you inherited it. Anyway, essentially, if we reduce corporate espionage and violence to mere numbers on a screen, to a game, or something so unlike the consequences of those actions would inspire, we can also remove the emotional calculation of the ones pulling the trigger, so to speak. Right?
Yeah.
It also makes you think of, like, even just Snowden, because when we had our whole surveillance episode, right, there's so many things that people do right now where we're not always fully understanding the gravity of what we're doing. You're just inputting data into a sheet, you're pushing buttons, and we don't always know what those buttons are going to lead to because we're so separated from the end results that it doesn't even feel like it's our responsibility. So it takes someone like Snowden to be like, it is our responsibility. Though, you know, we took a long time to do that. So you profited a lot off of that system before you said anything. Anyway, there's a lot. There's a lot to be said about that. But that's what I think is really scary is, like, what are they doing down there? How much control does this company have? And the fact that you would give, like, we already kind of give ourselves over often just to survive. And we work for soulless companies.
Yeah.
Apple TV exists, right? Made this amazing show. It is still a soulless company. And we have to, you know, like, there's always this constant grappling of, you know, being a consumer in a capitalist society. Like, we have no choice but to do that. But you can still be very aware of what's happening, and you try to be more conscious of it and make better decisions. But at the end of the day, there are going to be things that we just don't even know we're impacting, and that's what the severance process is.
Everything you don't see behind closed doors or behind, like, all the secrets
beyond the perplexing division designation, the corporate lingo and culture peppers its way into the experiences of the workers only in slightly peculiar, unsettling ways, where in our world we may be gifted a pizza party instead of something more helpful, like, I don't know, a race.
Yeah.
So we can feed our families.
Health insurance.
Yeah, health stuff insurance. Like
that. Time off. Crappy. Yeah.
Not have to work 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we work so we wouldn't have to do all 7 days. We can keep going. We can keep asking for better.
Yeah.
we don't have to accept what we have right now. But similar to a pizza party, but a little more weird, the metadata refinement team will be given a music dance experience for a few minutes of defiant jazz. That's what I call it. And they just dance. Or they get, like, items, like really meaningless prizes for doing a good job of the number sorting. And it's things for them to aspire to. Small things to they feel rewarded and like what they're doing matters, but it does matter, but not in the way that they're saying it matters. So the whole show is a brilliant critique on our work culture, the idea of hustle culture, and making your life making your whole life your job, right? Because it doesn't have to be, but people try to make that cool. I think it's so silly. Lumen boasts that you shouldn't live to work, but work to live. And yet, and in Innie's whole life is work. There's also a conversation to be said about Mark's residence at the Lumen-owned neighborhood. Because it's like the where he lives is all people, all employees of Lumen.
Yeah.
So it's, what was that, the corporate towns?
Yeah, I'll talk about it a little bit, but, like, industry towns, company
industry
towns.
Industry towns, thank you. Yeah, so that, like, it's literally, like, even though he's separated from his Innie, he is still, his whole life is Lumen.
Yeah.
Like, you're still doing it, dude.
Yeah.
You didn't leave anything. So I have questions. There's stuff to be said about that. There's stuff to be said about the oppressive and peculiar Mrs. Coble's life. She's like the head. And it's like, what is going on with her and her mom and like religion and like, and what? And then also anything to do with the founding father and family of Lumen, Keir Egan and the Egans. It's like, what is that? It's so weird. Like, everything is so weird. It's beautiful. I love it. It's kind of got like that Atlanta peculiarity of like, you're like, what?
And if everything means something, like under the Ben Stiller stipulation, you know, like then we're going to get answers for all that stuff, hopefully.
Yeah. Stipulation. So there is a second season greenlit and underway, though it has been stalled due to some creative disagreements amongst the team. Ben Stiller has gone on record saying, like, there's some of the team behind the creation are not in agreement with the rest of them about what is happening and what things mean. So everything has to have a meaning, but they have not agreed on what everything means. So that's causing like they're like arguing over that. But there's also the writer's strike. And so there's a lot to be considered there. But after the truly thrilling and successful and stressful ending season one left us with, I can't wait for it to pick back up and answer all the questions that it left us with, because it's a thrilling ending. What a great ending.
Yeah.
Just like, so stress. And I mean, there's like, is Lumen killing people or like reviving people, stealing people, making them into work slaves?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they are slaves. This is their whole life is down here.
And they don't get the benefits of the pay. So like their outies do, but they don't. Yeah.
It's like, how much do I make? I don't even know. What does it matter?
Yeah.
Like, I have the vending machine.
You get 2 coins a day. Pool. Like, what? Yeah. It's a whole thing. I'll talk about it. I'm talking more about the show than I probably should be, because as the fact section, I probably should be talking about other stuff. But I just loved it so much. So I was like, I need to get all my little thoughts out. But yeah, so I wrote a bunch, I think. I don't know if it's real, but I love the show. I thought it was the best thing ever. It was a masterpiece, in my opinion. I don't know. The fact everything means something makes me like it even more, because there are so many like little things that are in there that are kind of sprinkled throughout that you don't always get the answer for by the end of the first season. So the fact that like we likely will get an answer, even if that answer is up for debate currently, is exciting. But one thing that's really fun about the show is the fact that, one, it just really pushes for worker power and like worker collaboration and like
unionizing
and like lots of things that we have workers have been feeling a lot lately. There's a lot of wealth inequity, there's a lot of greedy companies doing real gross things to at our expense, and there's just a lot happening that made this really relevant. So but yeah, it's one of those shows where, as Gabe said, like, get an Apple trial, just so, like, you don't even got to keep it. It's one of those shows, once you start watching, you will not be able to stop watching. So you can watch the whole first season in like 2 days. So I cannot wait for season two, even if it takes a while. The show itself is very much a reflection of worker dissatisfaction, of feeling like we are not being treated as humans while at our jobs. And it's a reflection of jobs that are positioned as if they are really important, but holding little to no personal value for the workers seeing them through. Jobs that offer like literal to none emotional fulfillment, but try to rationalize their necessity with this cult-like euphemisms. Like, oh, we got, like, as you said, hustle culture and stuff like that. They're just like, we do this for this. And they have like this whole, like, the founders and all this other like really weird stuff that make it like a culture, as if, I guess they have to, because the Indies don't have any other world, but they have to create a world. But the world that they've created is just like, it's very clear they don't give any care about the Indies themselves. They're like, they're not people, but we're going to pretend they're people for the cameras. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, we're not coworkers. We're a family. It makes me think of Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah.
When they have that like conversation where they're like, we're together, we're equals, and it's like, okay, but are we gonna get paid more because we're equals? And they're like, we don't like to use that word.
It's a lot of talk, no action. Like, they want it to seem nice, and that's why Milchuk stressed me out so much because his whole thing is every word he said is very nice until like something bad happens. But like he's like very friendly, but it's very like ingenuine because he clearly is not trying to be friendly. It's like an intimidation move. Mm-hmm. And then like everything that you say has the potential for a consequence, but you don't mm-hmm. know what those consequences are necessarily. Like you don't know what is okay to say and what isn't. And I was just like, oh wow, this is like a neurodivergent human existing in a neurotypical world. You never know what reaction you're gonna get. But it was just, yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, it's also like the extra of like the break room where they send you when you've done something wrong, but you don't remember what happens in the break room.
Yeah.
So it's like, even that is a like an extra severance.
Yeah, no, it's like a whole thing. That's like, yeah, you have an extra separation or like stress piece to it. You just know you don't like it. Mm-hmm. You know,
it makes you feel wrong, right?
Yeah. But yeah, essentially, it is also a societal reflection of corporate obsession with whatever version of forced labor they can get. they want forced labor so bad. And they're just like, let's get some of that, no matter how we need to. Because they've already been doing it, but like they're like, ooh, more. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Because who cares if your job traumatizes you if you can't remember it? So it's this also a commentary on like the unseen harm that takes place behind closed doors, but not spoken above outside. And then also like the fact that like people don't talk about genuine like work stuff at work. Like they tell you, don't talk about how much you make with your coworkers. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about anything that's like uncomfortable at work with your coworkers. Like that's not appropriate work conversation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, you really get like kind of policed at your job to really be careful of like what you're talking to your coworkers about, because they don't want you to unionize. They don't want you to feel connected to each other. Because they want you to stay vulnerable, but also at odds with each other. Because you want to be competitive with each other. Because if you actually unite and work together, then you actually get what you want instead of like working against each other. So essentially, the show is a call for worker unity so that corporations are kept in check. And worker power is the main theme of my section. Essentially, the pandemic has given a lot of room for worker power. There was already a lot building to this. I mean, especially if you wrote this before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But essentially, before companies had a power of manipulating convenience before the pandemic, like through this light pollution that we mentioned in our last episode, mm-hmm. that immerses ourselves in every facet of like work. So we're so distracted that we can't see what's happening around us or like the impact of work on us. So like how institutions can lull you into a false sense of security as it gradually strips away your rights. And the pandemic in many ways gave us a wake up call, a shaking into reality that only a pause of that reality could achieve, as it's hard to know there's another way to exist when you've never seen what that can look like. And honestly, like them existing only in their work selves is a form of that, because it's like they don't know what the outside world is. So they don't know what they're missing. They just have mm-hmm. a feeling that something's missing. And then you really get to see, like, once they finally do get some information about what the outside world is, oh, they're ready to like rally, you know. Mm-hmm. But the pandemic has opened up a lot of people's eyes to what life can be without all those distractions from the jobs. So in a Vox article titled, "It's Still Possible to Get What You Want at Work, The Era of Worker Power Isn't Over," by Ronnie Mala, they say, "How we got here and even where here is complicated. At the start of the pandemic, companies laid off workers en masse, causing unemployment to jump to the highest rate since the Great Depression and leaving workers with very few options and literal leverage. Then, thanks in part to the government stimulus, the economy came roaring back and employers could not find enough workers to staff their operations. This ushered in an era of worker power dubbed the Great Resignation, in which workers were readily able to quit their jobs in exchange for better offers, driving up wages and prompting employers to propose all sorts of perks. Extending unemployment benefits came and went, but worker power remained." And the pandemic also showed many people how awful their companies that they worked for were, mm-hmm. and how thoughtless and cruel corporations could be, because like you spent all this time being loyal to a company and then they laid you off the second things hit the fan. You know what I mean? Like, so you're like, so loyalty means nothing. I don't need to stay here. I can leave and find something better. They're not going to be loyal to me. And they showed that to me in this. So why would I be loyal back? It really kind of like gave some reality to the distraction that was. So it also highlighted for many people what they were willing or weren't willing to do for a job. Risky lives needed comparable compensation to be worth it, and many people felt like it wasn't. And if like the world wanted normalcy back in any way, companies would have to pay up for it because people were not willing to risk their lives at the same level. So we saw wage increases, governmental support, and other programs that had previously been stated as not possible suddenly given freely. And we were painted a different picture of what could be done by our government as well as companies. And it gave workers a window into what could be. And this window has strengthened the movement, similar to how a glimpse from the outside for the innies is what strengthened their resolve to escape. So we've been given a view, and now we all want out.
We're like, nah, this sucks.
Yeah, like this isn't a good time. I hate it. So in another Vox article titled "Severance is Workplace Brutality Isn't Sci-Fi and Neither is Worker Power," they say Americans are quitting in droves. Companies paying poverty wages are having a hard time finding and retaining workers. Highly paid digital workers don't want to return to the office. The pandemic has stripped away the padding that made white collar jobs bearable. Lunches with coworkers, Starbucks runs, breaks in fresh air, leaving only the rotten core of actual work behind. So as you said, Gabe, they took all the good stuff. All like the part you liked is gone now. So like, why be here? Yeah. And the message that Severance wants us to take away is that we have power. The companies in reality need us, not the other way around. And that if we work for our with our coworkers and build camaraderie that extends even outside the workplace, that we can make meaningful impact in our daily lives. We see this in the show where any authentic communication takes place on the severed floor is like a signal like, oh, something real is happening. We're actually connecting. We're finally like taking off those like really scary smiles and having a conversation. And it's in those moments that the severed employees find their drive to rebel, especially when they like finally like just connect as people. So essentially this makes them realize that they're not alone with their feelings. And Helly as a character essentially acts as this like force to make everyone face their problems head on because of her just like very open and blatant rebellion. Like before they're kind of like, they were rebelling, but they were being quiet about it. You know what I mean? Like they were doing it in secret. And she's like, I don't care if everyone knows I hate it here. They will know.
That is
the rebellion, you know what I mean? And she's like, I don't even care if I die, I don't care what happens, I'm sending a message. And this kind of like any means necessary energy acts as like an ignition for more radical change. And the severed floor acts as a reminder for where we could end up if we allow corporations like Lumen to run unchecked. By preserving our autonomy, our genuineness, and our connection with each other, we protect ourselves. And we protect worker power. So the result that we've seen as a result of this increase in worker power is increased wages, better workplace environments, and more meaningful incentives for staff that extend beyond like empty pizza parties, as Gabe said. Give us some health insurance. Give us some days off. Give us something that actually matters. Give us raises. All that money you spend on pizza, you know what would be even better? that work retreat, I didn't need it. You know what I needed? Money.
I need some time off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what would really solve my burnout more than this like meeting that we're having? Not working.
Yeah, not having a meeting.
Yeah. Get rid of them. The show acts as a warning against things like company towns as well as like things that keep workers enclosed, dependent, and vulnerable. So the situation that the innies are in is very similar to that of a worker town, in that like there's no escape from work. All their life is work. And in a PBS documentary titled Slavery by Another Name, they overview the history of company towns and speak to people who grew up in them. So like people who had lived experiences. I watched some of the videos. and like clips from it, but essentially they give a like overview of what it's about, and I just thought it was interesting. So if you want to check it out, it does kind of give a nice overview of what company towns have been in the United States, as well as like their impact on like real human beings that you get to like hear the stories of. So in remote locations such as railroad construction sites, lumber camps, turpentine camps, and coal mines, jobs often existed far from established towns. As a pragmatic solution, the employer sometimes developed a company town where an individual company owned all the buildings and businesses. And in some situations, company towns developed out of a paternalistic effort to create utopian worker villages. There's like times where it worked, where churches, schools, libraries, and other amenities were constructed in order to encourage healthy communities and productive workers. So like they made like nice places to live for people. And saloons and other places or services believed to be negative influences were prohibited. So you're also getting this like control influenced by the company town. But in a lot of cases, the company town's motivations were less ideal. The remoteness and lack of transportation prevented workers from leaving for other jobs or to buy other independent merchants. In some cases, companies paid employees with scrip. So not money, just money that worked in the town that was only good at company stores. And without external competition, housing costs and groceries in company towns would become exorbitant. And workers built up large debts so that they essentially weren't allowed to leave till they paid them off. So through these existence in company towns, end up being like enslaved to these companies.
Yeah, indentured servitude.
Yeah. So company towns often house laborers in fenced in or guarded areas. So as we see in Severance, they do that. And the company towns often basically used the excuse that they were protecting the laborers from unscrupulous traveling salesmen, when in reality, they were keeping them inside and keeping them basically trapped. As they say in Severance multiple times, are we trapped here? Yes. In the South, free laborers were and convict laborers were often housed in the same spaces and suffered equally terrible mistreatment. So people who like went willingly and people who did not, all kept together and treated equally terrible.
It's also just like going back to the scripts thing, that's insane.
Yeah,
that means they're not paying any money.
No, yeah, it's just slavery.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like really mad about it.
There's a whole documentary about the history of company towns.
That's so gross.
As a fun fact, company towns in modern days exist.
Yeah, Amazon.
Yep. As hubs for like Amazon and Facebook, even Google's trying to get in on it a little bit. Amazon has transformed the bulk of Seattle specifically into company-owned property. They have not made an official company town of sorts, but they've like bought every single commercial building for the most part. They own 40%, if not more, of all the property in Seattle. So Facebook has also done a similar thing, but like to the next level, and they're working to create a town called Willow Village in Merlot Park, California. What was so weird about researching this is the last article I could find about it was in 2022. And it was like, it's in development. This is like what's happening. It's coming soon. Facebook's so pumped about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's been nothing in 2023. So I'm like, that's sus. Like what
happened?
What has been developing in 2023 that like you can't talk about?
Thing.
And also like Facebook owns like half the media. So like, of course, if they don't want people talking about it, they're not going to talk about it. So like what happened?
There's probably like BlackRock towns that we just don't know about.
Yeah. So essentially there's like different types of industry towns and they have similar impacts, but with different implementation. The Amazon strategy is to buy up all the commercial property, limit competition, basically make living that, but like also like fuel the economy there. So essentially they just make it a commercial hub so that all living amenities go up. Rent increases, infrastructure costs increases because of the economic demand for living in these areas. So the Facebook method is a little different in that they're like kind of trying to create like a whole town that just is Facebook. They want scrip. You know what I mean? They're trying to create a situation where like everything you need is in this little town. Why ever need to go another place? And all your money, everything you own and all the things that you need are all here. So I feel like it would not be preposterous to think that Facebook would eventually stop paying people money and would instead start paying people for all the amenities that they get to receive.
The metabucks.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Or like, or like the metaverse, like to exist there. I don't even know.
Yeah.
So it says, in this instance, it seems like Facebook's income creation will mimic a Lumen structure without severance currently, but like the metaverse provides so many opportunities for weird brain stuff to happen. Jobs within these industry towns appeal most to people, honestly, who currently lack security in their daily lives, and it only benefits those types of industries if our daily quality of life for workers declines. So if rent prices, housing, everything you need to survive goes up, 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 people will become more desperate. And through that desperation, might participate in these industry towns willingly so that they don't have to take the negative PR.
Just like Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah.
And the platform.
Yeah. And severance. Because like half the people, they go in willingly. But then once they're there, they can't leave, you know? There's also a decent amount of commentary on workplace conditions and the way offices are designed around limiting worker communication, access to sunlight, et cetera. A lot of workplace culture has developed, I think, since the original writing of this. Like, cubicles died in 2000, for the most part. Not exclusively, but, like, a lot. And essentially, a lot of workplace environments changed, as you said, Gabe, to, like, being open. And everyone, like, could see each other. And you got all these, like, weird chairs and, like, color schemes for one. Yeah, like, amenities of sorts. But, yeah, the workplace environments have changed for the most part in positive ways with, like, I read a bunch of articles and there's, like, a bunch that have accepted that millennials want standing desks. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're more likely to say yes to little amenities. Like, I'll buy your computer. Sure. I'll get you a standing desk. If you want to take a nap, that's chill. But, like, they're more willing to accept, like, the workplace amenities that millennials will be more, and Gen Z, honestly, will be more likely to demand, whereas like established companies that have housed the bulk of like boomer and Gen X populations are significantly less willing to be welcoming to that kind of environment because they're like, this has always worked, why would we change?
Has it always worked
But yeah, so essentially in actuality workplace amenities and like general environments have improved. We're not in a space like they don't want windowless rooms and stuff like that. They're like the Industrial Revolution and the windowless factories and stuff like that still exist somewhere, but they have been trying to cut down on it. Mostly I assume because of the negative PR. so essentially workplaces overall have improved, but we see that in severance that they clearly do not consider severed humans, because according to the many articles I read about what are considered humane modern workplace conditions, severance does not adhere to any of that. They don't have windows. They continue the utilization of cubicles, the empty and seemingly purposeless space that really has like nothing going on, like the floor and the fluorescent lights, gross green carpet, fluorescent lights, white walls that like have no decorations other than like these weird murderous paintings. And all this space that's not being utilized, that just makes everything feel kind of weird. And these like hallways to nowhere and all these like kind of meaningless little incentives that don't do anything, and don't mean anything to somebody who like never leaves the space, all exists there, which kind of showcases like how little they see severed people as people. One thing that I forgot to say before is like one thing that COVID did that was pretty positive for workplace relation or regulations is they made air quality requirements. So before the pandemic, there were a lot of places that had really unsafe air quality that could not operate as such anymore because they needed to put air filters in there. They needed to open up vents. They needed to like update equipment and stuff like that. And some that never did too, I'm sure, like people who like flew under the radar, but lots of places specifically like government buildings, et cetera, had to really update all that stuff to increase working conditions. So like, that's a positive.
Just think about the Lorraine and Legionnaire's disease. Mm-hmm. All because they didn't have good filtration systems. Everybody got sick.
Yeah. So, like, that's, like, they're, like, you can't do that. It's illegal. But essentially, we see in Severance that, like, all these fake celebrations, cheap gifts that mean nothing, that they don't care about the well-being of their staff. And, like, all of those things mean nothing when you don't care about the well-being of your staff. Like, him having, like, a drawer full of, like, fun drawings of himself. Mm-hmm. It's like, who is he going to show those to?
Oh,
he has no life outside of here. So, like, why does it even matter? And the answer is it doesn't. So the show calls all of this out in how jobs can really dehumanize their workers while they exist in these spaces. And that only someone entirely detached from that experience could be expected to want to come back to that the next day. The last little piece that I wanted to cover is where we are currently standing when it comes to worker power. So times have been good. The workers' movement has continued to rise largely because of increased demand for workers after the loss of many retiring baby boomers in the pandemic, as well as the mass loss of life from the pandemic. This need for workers has forced companies to raise wages to compete with each other. And as loyalty to companies is no longer a priority, quality of life is. And that's really increased where workers stand. This extends, like, in honestly every single area. People don't want to go to work anymore. Like, in terms of physical, like, they want to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
They can do that because they're not.
Yeah, we don't need brick and mortar anymore.
Exactly. So, like, people are way more willing to stand up for what they want within the workplace. And because they've really been like, oh, I am not going to die for this crap job. Not going to do mm-hmm. it. So that's really increased a lot of, like, worker strikes. There's, like, push for unions. Young people love unions. Mm-hmm. Apparently, like, the percentage of people who approve of unions has gone up exponentially. And it's also shined a light on, like, wealth inequality and distrust for companies. Workers are angry because the wealth gap has grown so great that they are suffering, that they have been suffering during COVID while, like, companies have been benefiting off of that. So, like, employers have exploited the opportunity to make money and then didn't share any of it. And that's mm-hmm. the problem. And that's from that Vox article. So essentially, like, worker power has gone up a lot, and we're also, like, way mad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we're angry. So we're not going to stand for it anymore. And the company showed they have no loyalty. So why should we?
Yeah. Yeah. There's, like as you're talking and as, like, we're revisiting, there's just so much to be said about the show. And that's just, like, what happens with us often, where we can't really get it in on time because it's an entire show and we're just one episode about it. So it's like, dang it. I wanted to say way more. And that's what I'm a little nervous, because our next series will feature a lot of series. And so it's like, how do we digest an entire series into 1 hour episode? But we're gonna give it a shot. I think there's, like, themes that have been covered in this that are covered elsewhere. I do think this does it in a really consumable way that's charming as well. Like, you really, really care for the characters, and you want to know, you know. And I think it is relieving to know that they have a point, that they have an idea. And they're not going to, because how many times have we watched, like, a show and then it's like, actually, it's canceled or no one knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one of the signs for the protest for the writer's strike was like, pay us more money or I'm going to spoil season 2 of Severance. I was like, give them the money.
Oh, my God. And, like, the whole show is calling out, like, not giving workers what they want. So they better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I hope the people writing it felt just, like, inspired, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're like, yeah, I don't need to take this, let me go protest, thanks guy for giving us this idea.
Yeah, I'm sure he's, like, down with it too. It might even be I mean, Postmates. He gets it, he knows the struggle. Yeah. He wants money too. Yeah. And it's just like, there's a demand for respect, and I think that's really valid, and I love that it has come through. We can absolutely put together another ways to help section, maybe to inspire where you can find resources to you know, come together, maybe like a little, like, what is a union, how does that work, how can you make actually yourself? Have
That linked. So
yay.
Yeah, I need to figure out where it is in here, but it's in here.
That's great. Yeah, so we'll have that in our show notes in our ways to help. We'll teach you about unions in that way and see if that's right for you. Just remember that, like, unions are why we have weekends. Mm-hmm. Unions are why we don't work all the time.
Yeah. It's like most European countries have a 4-day work week.
Yeah.
Because unions.
Unions are why we have sick time.
And I mean, there's been...
And why children aren't working in factories.
Yeah, literally. They let children die in factories. So that's what they did. People are going to do the worst thing. Unless mm-hmm. you position yourself to argue for different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like, the companies and people in power are going to do the worst thing. Yeah. Always.
But essentially, like... One thing that was in my little thing is that lots of places that were thought to be impossible to unionize have started successfully unionizing. Like, it's been a big deal, like Starbucks, UPS, teachers, et cetera. Like, there's been a lot of wins for unions. Mm-hmm. Amazon's next. I don't know. You know, they're trying. Get it.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, like, unions are happening. People are real, like, 42% compared to, like, an increase in approval of unions. People mm-hmm. want them. They're like, companies, don't trust them. Trickle-down economics doesn't work. Flip the tables. Take everything. And that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. The theme of this, our Horrors of Society series this year, has very much been like, money isn't real. And this flip the systems. It's all a problem.
Hope exists. Let's get it. Go forth. It's very like the opposite of Don't Look Up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just doom. It's like, oh, actually, no, we have a lot of power. Let's use it. Let's work together. Let's be friends. I need to work on being more social for that to happen. But
yeah, it'd be like that. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed this series. We have one more next week, and then we're moving on to something new. If mm-hmm. you watch Severance, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Like Kat said, if you didn't like it, maybe we don't want to hear your thoughts because you're wrong.
No. There's a perspective I didn't pick up on. Maybe something weird happened and I just don't have the right lens, but also I hope that it's not ever viewed as bad because I love it.
Yeah tell us if there's because there definitely is things that we've missed, so let us know what you thought of it. If there's something you think we should come back and cover again, maybe in season 2 we'll do another touch up on it, see what happened. And like and subscribe, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And don't get married.
Delete your kids.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
Or turn them into
or severed workers.
Workforces, yeah. You know? Just like the school system. We did that whole episode too.
Yeah. We always be talking about it in some way.
Yeah. All right. Bye.